For a while, we're going to have with us someone who is no stranger to these airwaves. And, of course, he just attended and addressed the American Free Press Conference in Washington. And that is Eustace Mullins, who is back here by popular demand. Good evening to you, Mr. Mullins.
Well, good evening. I'm happy to report that the Washington Conference was a great success. And,
excellent.
They really kept me busy. I was signing books and having my picture taken the whole time.
I wish I had had time this year to come. I'm working on my own projects back home, but I was the MC 4 years ago when they had their conference and met a lot of great people there. And
they came from all over the world. This was really an international conference.
Yeah, and then, Eustace, who are some of the people you met for the first time at the conference?
Oh, I met Fred Matahedy.
Uh-huh.
He has the Freedom Law School in California, and
mm-hmm.
he's doing a great job. And
mm-hmm.
so many of the people whom I met there, I talked to a half hour or so, and we immediately began to form tremendous plans and operations, and it was like it was almost like the birth of the Republic when they wrote the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah, and you met some of our people from Republic, didn't you?
I certainly did.
I enjoyed that very much. You spoke with, John Statmiller?
Oh, yes. I spent a lot of time with him.
Uh-huh.
And we have a lot of plans together right now.
Great.
In the near future.
Excellent. You are a treasure and a resource, a true national treasure.
Well, I think I just like working with other people.
And you are busy. You are busy. You never have a restless moment.
Oh, yes. Well, that makes it much more interesting.
Absolutely.
I mean, I may get a 9-to-5 job in another 50 years, but not right now.
Not right now. No, you'll slow down by then, though, undoubtedly.
Oh, yeah. I'll start taking it easy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I know you've been working on a number of books. People who listen to the program, of course, know who you are, but we, you know, for sake recapitulating after the break, I'll have you just to briefly give us a thumbnail sketch of your history. And also, I want to hear what you spoke about for those who didn't attend at the conference and what you spoke about when we return from the break. But, Eustace, I know you're working on, I guess the last time we spoke, what, about 25, 30 new books?
38 books.
38 books.
I can't get away from that figure, 38.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how many books I got to do. And I told some of the people there, Willis's assistant, let me see.
Willis Cardo, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, his assistant,
mm-hmm. yes.
who's been getting out a lot of books lately.
Right, right.
And he told me, he said, I've got so many more ideas of books. I said, that's the awful thing about books. The more you write, the more you want to write.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It used to be that people wrote one book and quit, but now it's become an addiction.
And you can't quit, right?
No,
all
you
right.
can't quit.
You stay where you are. Eustace Mullins, we'll be right back. And we begin the program with Eustace Mullins. And Eustace, people don't know you. Some of our new listeners, our younger listeners, you've been around for a long time, and I guess it was way back in the 40s or so that you started having some problems in the Library of Congress, and you were singled out and you were fired. You were a political fiery, so to speak, huh?
I was the only person fired from the Library of Congress for political reasons in the entire history. Well, they should put up a plaque to me.
Well, I know we have. We've put up a serious plaque in our hearts and minds about what you went through in those days, and you know you're not going to be counted in the collectivist socialist media as a hero to them, but to us you are, because of what you had gone through and how you were singled out strictly because of your political views that did not ring kosher, if I may say so, with the political establishment and the Roosevelts and people of that sort who certainly knew how to punish his enemies.
Oh, they really want to punish their enemies. And their enemies were anybody who spoke against communism.
Right.
Because the Roosevelt Red regime was the most communist period of American history.
I know. We're going through that now as we produce this this documentary for cable access.
Oh, yeah.
Originally, and then it will be available for anyone. But on World War II, the period of betrayal, American betrayal of freedom, and its role along with Britain in
that's a great story. It's got to be told.
It has to be told, and unfortunately, most people have no idea what went on. Young people don't even know anything about it, except what's spoon-fed them by the publishing houses, the media, the Hysteria Channel, and all of the rest of them that feed these young minds and old alike with nothing more than mythology and absolute falsehood. So we want to set the record straight about what actually happened. And in fact, we're looking forward to hopefully maybe one or two survivors of the Soviet Holocaust that took place during and after World War II, when, as you know, many millions of people were either put to death or were enslaved under communism as a direct result of our alliance with the Bolsheviks.
That was an extermination campaign. That's all it was.
Absolutely. And Roosevelt was totally behind that, and it was so blatant and so obvious. Some people have suggested that that Stalin actually had Roosevelt meet with a premature demise because of the embarrassment that Roosevelt was beginning to experience and speak out against.
Oh, yeah. Roosevelt happened to get on the King Fahd yacht, and he promised King Fahd that he would stand up for the rights of the Arab peoples. And so that's when he experienced a sudden turn for the worse, and he died right back on the spot.
Interesting, yes. Was it at, what was his name there, Baruch's house, I believe?
Oh, Bernard Baruch.
Bernard Baruch's house.
He actually lived at the White House.
Uh-huh.
And he spent most of his time, sometimes they didn't have room for him at the White House, so he went and sat across the park at Lafayette Square, which became a great hangout for homosexuals.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the real wild kind. These look just weren't ordinary homosexuals. These are flaming homosexuals.
Now, did Eleanor spend a great deal of time there, I'm wondering?
Well, Eleanor preferred the girls.
That's sort of what I meant, the lesbian.
She spent her time with some of the wealthiest lesbians in the country, like Ann Morgan, J.P. Morgan's daughter, happened to be, she set up whole homosexual enclaves in New York City, which were east side sort of suburbs, but they were all homosexuals. And Sutton Place is the most expensive address in New York. Well, Anne and Eleanor converted Sutton Place into the most lavish homosexual hangout in New York City.
Sort of reminds me of Hillary and Bill, you know?
Well,
Franklin and Eleanor and Hillary and Bill. It sort of has a ring to it.
These people create their own atmosphere, their own enclaves, and that's sort of a private domain of their own. It's like Ezra once told me, he said, animals create their own manure. And these people are real animals.
And they certainly had a lot of manure, there's no question about that. I'm wondering, how is it that Franklin ever met Eleanor and arranged for that marriage?
Well, it must have been an arranged marriage, and they had some children.
Oh,
but,
yes.
I don't know how they ever arranged that, because I don't think they slept together for over about 60 years.
Well, that's it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But, somehow,
and then again, I mean, if you were Franklin, would you share a bed with her? I don't think I would share I hate to say it, but I don't think I would share a back alley with her. But,
well, if I woke up in bed and said the old eyes and Eleanor was there, I think I would be permanently deranged. I don't think I could cope with that.
I mean, that was the big thing at the time, you know, comedians. In those days, they didn't have Saturday Night Live, you know, programs like that, but I mean, they were having a lot of fun with that, and it wasn't funny, because when you think of what the White House was composed of, hey, Jack Kennedy had nothing new going on, and you know, with all of the scandals that could have been reported but weren't, the media then were very much in with the politicians, and the political establishment that were their own. They protected them heavily, didn't they?
Oh, yes. Well, I spent a lot of time with the family named the Butler family.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was my fraternity brother. I spent a lot of time in New York.
Right.
And so Andrew Butler told us one day at lunch that he had just went over to Book Club, with the most exclusive club in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And Newton Minow, who was then the chairman of the SEC, was mm-hmm. arguing with somebody about Ellen's origins. And finally, Newton Minow yelled out, that's not true. They said, what was Ellen's background? And he said, coachman.
Mm-hmm.
And he shut Minow out. They never said another word.
Unreal. I want to ask you a little bit about the American Free Press Conference and your speech, your address. I think you told me privately you had planned to speak on one thing and then you sort of changed the address to something else.
I didn't change my mind. My mind went out on me.
Oh, it just went.
No, you see, I waited so long to talk.
Right,
there's a lot
right.
of people talking.
Yeah.
And when I got up to speak,
mm-hmm.
I planned this lecture very carefully.
Yeah.
And it was to be about counterfeiting.
Counterfeiting, yep.
Yeah, and a new definition of the president of the United States,
uh-huh.
that he was not really chief of staff and commander-in-chief of the army, but
yeah.
he was the chief counterfeiter of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his real title.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to tell the people all this and about the counterfeiters, and when I got up to talk, I couldn't remember one word of it. So I heard a switch in midair, and I gave a lecture about my early experiences in Washington as a child, a little practice child, a greenhorn. When I came there, and there were three buildings that I spent all my time at.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the Library of Congress, the Federal Reserve Building, and St. Elizabeth's Hospital for the Insane.
Mm-hmm.
I was visiting people there. I was never a patient, although probably I should have been. I got some treatment while I was out there.
Mm-hmm.
I missed an opportunity. I never got any treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
so I told the,
yeah.
The people, these were people who had come to Washington,
yeah.
some of them for the first time, and I said the three, the most interesting places in Washington, which the tourists never see, and that's Federal Reserve Building and Library of Congress and St. Elizabeth's Hospital for the Insane. And I spent all of my time at those three buildings.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I moved into the Library of Congress and lived for a while because I was sort of a homeless person for a while. It's easy to become a homeless person when you run out of money.
Oh, yes. Oh,
and
yes.
When they fired me from the Library of Congress, of course, I had no income. So
yes.
I moved in and lived there for a while. It's very
sure.
nice. I had this huge building with marble floors, and
mm-hmm.
I haven't lived that well since.
Yes.
But what mm-hmm. I really, and telling people about this, I was telling about my autobiography, which I've been working on,
mm-hmm.
and that was all about my Washington years with at the Federal Reserve Building. And well, it was very pleasant going to the Federal Reserve Building. They had a tiny library, and when I went there and looked into it, I found out that most of the books were by Eustace Mullins.
About Eustace Mullins?
No, by Eustace Mullins.
By Eustace Mullins.
No, they weren't about there.
Since then, there have been a few with your name in it, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And your name has been bandied about by pro and con, friend and foe.
Oh, yes, it pops up on the Internet a lot.
Quite a bit, yes. But that's good, because that means you're rocking some boats, and
well,
you're making some waves out there.
Oh, the Internet is rocking some boats.
Well, that's
it.
You know? Sure it is, absolutely. And that reminds me, you know, we'll be talking about it later this week, about the so-called 9/11 conspiracy theory of the government, and how now the lapdog press and media are doing everything they can to sort of do damage control on behalf of George Bush and the administration with which they supposedly have become estranged. So it's kind of amusing to watch this unfold. And one of the things they will refer to in this New York Times piece just peddled over the weekend in many papers is the conspiracy theories of those who don't accept the government's conspiracy theory. In the first paragraph, Eustace, they start out by quoting various people, learned people, experts in the field, who are using the Internet, and they're using public access television across the nation to cast doubt upon the official conspiracy theory of the government. And immediately I said, well, now, Isn't that interesting? Why do they have to use cable television, free television, and free internet? Because you guys in the New York Times will not allow their voices to be heard.
Oh, yeah, talk about censorship.
And control, those are the words. We'll be right back, Eustace. Going to take a quick break. Eustace, I know you, as you mentioned, you wound up talking about your experiences in Washington as a young man, up to your later years. And I guess you, when did you officially, if you will, become detached from the Washington scene?
Well, they detached me. They fired me at the Library of Congress, and I could not get a job in Washington.
You were blacklisted, really?
I was blacklisted, but I wound up in New York.
I
landed up in the artist colony in Greenwich Village.
Oh, my.
Which was quite a change from Washington, I'll tell you.
Wow, that's interesting.
You know, there's a lot of controversy in Washington right now about how they're going to observe 9/11. They finally decided not to have it at all because they thought all these conspiracy theorists would come out and just ruin their day. And so I think they're going to hold it quietly somewhere and not tell anybody.
Yeah. Well, you're right. The conspiracy so-called theorists who are actually, many people are historians, physicists, experts, scientists, and so forth.
Well, yes,
who are,
they're thrashing.
They're thrashing, right, the government's conspiracy case and doing a pretty good job of it. Now, you have to ask yourself if indeed the media are so honest and they're so above board and they're not controlled, why is it that not one of them, to my knowledge, has given an adequate forum to any of these people, such as Professor Jones and others who have spoken so and written so eloquently as experts in the field on the total falsification of the collapse of the Twin Towers, the planes, and every other aspect that they can handle about 9/11. Why have they not been given the respectability that they so deserve? And it certainly isn't because they're out of the so-called mainstream. It is because they have exposed the so-called mainstream as being corrupt. And, you know, the New York Times corruption, we talked about this before, in particular, going way back to the 20s with the Walter Duranty case.
Oh, my gosh, that was a tragedy.
it was a tragedy for
the New York Times.
Here was a guy, Walter Duranty, you remember him.
Oh, yes. That was one of the most famous cases of reporting in the history of New York City.
Misinformation.
And they caught him dead to rights. He was being paid to do this, you know.
He was being paid by the New York Times to lie about Joe Stalin's Russia.
Absolutely. And about the hell that was. Well, they're going to try to confound these conspiracy theorists on 9/11 by demonstrating that you can burn down a skyscraper with a gallon of gasoline.
Yeah. I guess they would try to make that happen if they could. But
well,
unfortunately,
I don't know how they're going to do it.
Unfortunately, they and the laws of physics don't quite agree.
No,
and that is the problem. And that's why just today, I guess it was on CNN, they tried to quell some of those questions, noting the alarming and frightening fact that more than one-third of all Americans polled say that they do not believe in the official government theory, and they do believe that indeed government of the United States and perhaps others had a role in 9/11. That's putting it mildly. And, of course, that is frightening people both in the media and in the government who often basically walk down the same aisle. So they brought on this character from U.S. News and World Report, Mort Zuckerman's publication.
Oh, Mort always gets on television. Well, and he's very optimistic and cheerful, and he never tells the truth about anything.
No, well, that's why he's in the media business. Okay, but anyway, so they brought this character on, and all he did was to, peruse the fact that there is a controversy and that these people are not believers in the government. They hate the government. They don't believe in Big Brother. They don't believe that the government is competent or honest and all of this. But he never dealt with any of the issues that have been shown to be totally and completely incongruous on the part of the government's theories about 9/11. So that in itself was revealing, and that is the reason why they are fueling the media themselves, not knowing how to handle this controversy, are helping to fuel the skepticism and doubt. on the part of the government.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, they all talk about conspiracy theorists, mm-hmm. which is a contradiction in term, mm-hmm. because a conspiracy cannot be a theory, and
that's
a theory
right.
cannot be a conspiracy. So how do you reconcile the two if you can't? And they get really confounded themselves when they try to do this.
Right, exactly.
I have no theories about conspiracy, and I never have had any. I only, as a historian, I research facts.
That's right, that's right. And there were no facts to substantiate the government's claim about 9/11 being perpetrated by this mythical Al-Qaeda network and Osama bin Laden.
It's one of the great mythologies of modern history.
Right. I mean, it does exist, undoubtedly, but it is not this so-called Islamic network of terrorists that just happens to have a revolving door around the globe. In fact, it is part of the CIA more than anything.
Well, it certainly is. Well, you see, Bill O'Reilly invented this term Islamofascism, apparently, which was originated by Benito Mussolini.
And we're back with Eustace Mullins, who is really part of Americana. And he is an icon, in my view, of everything that personifies true Americanism and patriotism and not this phony neoconservatism. The word itself is a misnomer that permeates America today.
It really is, and it does describe conservatives and neoconservatives. It's like black and white. They're so different. There's mm-hmm. no way you can compare them.
And, Pat Buchanan's latest column, Salvo, at the neocons and their next planned target, Iran, is just excellent. In fact, it's on the homepage today of our network, Republic Broadcasting. You might want to avail yourselves of it and spread the word on rbnlive.com. But, Eustace, we have a number of people already lined up to talk to you.
All
so
right.
Let me go to the phones, and then we'll intermingle some other conversation in between. 1-800-313-9443. Got a comment, a question for the ever-well-known, famous Eustace Mullins, author of many books, including on the Federal Reserve System, the Treasury, and, of course, other topics such as medicine and so forth in government. All right, let's start with Tom in Ohio. Hello, Tom.
Eustace, can you be called at home?
I get all my calls at home.
What's your phone number?
886.
You want to give it out over the air, Eustace?
Well, that's all right.
Okay.
886-5580.
In area code, what?
540.
Okay.
You can call me anytime up to 10 o'clock.
You got a new phone now. You got all straightened out now.
I
no
got
more
a new phone, and it rings.
Hey, Eustace.
Yes.
How old are you now?
I'm 85.
Well, I hope I live that long, but the way I smoke, I don't know.
Well, I never expected to live that long. It was quite a surprise to me.
Yeah, I think we're all surprised at you. We're all surprised. Hey, what was the last straw that broke the back up there? They don't want you to watch that no more.
Oh, well, that was when they fired me from Library of Congress in 1952. And I've been going back ever since. Washington has totally changed. Several people told me that over this Labor Day holiday, I was up there doing some videos about Ezra Pound, and they came out very well. But the town itself was totally deserted, and the people told me today, back here in Stanton, about how spooky Washington was. And it was very eerie being there over the holiday, and the town was totally deserted.
Eustace, these devil worshippers, how long do you think it'll be before they just go ahead and drop it on us?
Well, I don't know if they really drop it on us, because devil worshippers don't really want to do anything that final.
They want to keep us around, so they keep offering us up for sacrifices?
Well, they need human sacrifices. You can't very well exterminate humanity, which is what they seem to be trying to do. And there's no other explanation for it. But in my book, The Curse of Canaan, I talked to a demonology. And in my last lecture, I talked to a demonology. And demonology throughout history. And nobody else talks about that. They say, oh, you see demons everywhere. They used to say, you see communists under the bed.
Mm-hmm.
But the communists weren't under the bed. They were in the White House.
Right.
Hey, Eustace, have you seen that new DVD by Clifford Kernicom, Aerosol Crimes?
No, I haven't seen that. That would be very interesting.
Oh, you've got to see that. Then you may have a different answer for me when I call here again.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Tom, thanks for your call. Let's see. Paul in Delaware is next. Hi, Paul.
Hi. How you gentlemen doing tonight?
Okay.
Oh, very good.
Very good.
Hey, Houston. I really appreciate your work, man. I like the way you present it. And since you were talking about demonology, I've got a real deep question, and I hope that you'll be able to answer it for a lot of us out here that have this question. And that is, after the King James Version of the Bible was written by King James, his second book was Demonology.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. And I just wanted to see if you had any kind of more information regarding that.
No, I've got to find out about that. You've lit a fire now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Hey, Rick, I know you're not going to like this, but I want to plug my MySpace account because I've got important information there, and it's nothing there for sale other than just information.
That's all right. Go ahead.
It's myspace.com/ awaken free, AwakenFree. And I really appreciate it. And keep on having Eustace Mullins back because I hope that he can answer
that
question
will.
At some point.
Yeah, we sure
all
will.
Right, man.
And he's a great asset, and we need more of people like Eustace in the world. And, you know, Eustace, before we take the next call, that reminds me, you know, today universities and colleges are, for the most part, as you know, institutions of booby hatches, where the professors and the departments of whatever it might be, social science, departments of history and so forth, are usually well endowed and bought and paid for by powerful forces and special interests. So the chair of the department and the professors, the faculty, wind up towing the mark largely. Thankfully, not always, but largely they are corrupt. I hate to say it, but I know. I've been through the system.
No, you're not libeling anybody. You're just telling the truth.
Amen. So what we find today is young people starved for real knowledge, starved,
they're
I mean,
not
famished.
Starved, they're robbed of knowledge.
Yes.
And they're paying thousands of dollars a year for this so-called education.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one reason I wrote my books. When I went to the Library of Congress in 1947, I couldn't find any books about anything. I had to start writing all these books.
Yep.
And that's too much work for me.
Well, you know, I could give an example from my own personal experiences of when I was going through college, and both the college library and the public school, public city libraries in my neck of the woods were both keeping off the shelves books that were of a different stripe in opposition to the so-called mainstream in economics, for instance. You'd have like 10 books by someone like I'm thinking of John Maynard Keynes and his economic nonsense. Huh?
Kenneth Galbraith.
One of his progenitors. And, you know, you wouldn't have anything on the shelves by Ludwig von Mises or by Henry Hazlitt.
Oh, I don't think they still have.
For the most part, no, they've been purged. And then I found out the reason, of course, was that in the libraries, and the American Library Association was tied in with the so-called civil liberties movement, and they used to proclaim how interested they were in freedom of speech, and yet they were censoring from the shelves themselves of many of the libraries books that would be of a different stripe. Now, you could go in the library and find ADL books, such as The Radical Right and so forth,
yeah,
which were attacks on you and Robert Welch and Dan Smoot and Billy Hargis and others and so forth. And they would proclaim this was the radical right. Anyone who was opposed to communism, socialism, or Marxism, or the New World Order was a radical, whereas someone who was promoting it was considered a mainstream writer and a mainstream political scientist, you see. And this is what the American Library Association has done. And this is what the college libraries have done. So that students researching a topic are not apt to find a book by Eustace Mullins on the Federal Reserve, but they can find 15 or 20 right off the bat on how great the Federal Reserve system is, you see?
Oh, how well it works, and it was banking reform
exactly
that freed the American people.
And this is
why
I'm bringing it out on the program, because parents listening to me now, or even college students, they know now that when their young people are doing research, they're deliberately deprived of the opportunity to learn.
Well, they are.
All
and
of
you
these
know,
subjects.
I went to 8 of the best universities in this country, and I could not find a word out about anything. So I wound up in an art school in Washington, D.C., and I happened to go to the insane asylum to visit the illegally held Ezra Pound,
mm-hmm.
who was held 13 and a half years as a trial,
mm-hmm.
and anyone can tell you that the Constitution does not allow that. Well,
that's
after
right.
I met Ezra Pound, he started telling me what was really going on, and I had an education before that, before I realized it. And I've been telling my audience ever since that I got my education in the insane asylum. It was not deliberate. I never intended that. In fact, they didn't have any insane asylum, which gave college degrees at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I should have one.
Well, I think we can honestly say that most of these institutions today would qualify as asylums.
Oh, they are asylums. They're asylums for the incompetent, the corrupt, and the traitors.
Absolutely. Let's take another call, 1-800-313-9443 for Eustace Mullins in Hartwell in Louisiana. Hello, you're next.
I think it would be a big advantage to educate our people, our elected officials in Washington, D.C. about 9/11. United States Senator David Zitter held a town hall meeting here in Abbeville, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
I went to it. And I told him that the Twin Towers were brought down with demolition charges, and I asked him to investigate the attack that occurred on 9/11. And he told me that I dishonored the people that died on 9/11 by saying that the Twin Towers were brought down with demolition charges. So it seems like it's going to be kind of hard to
now,
educate
did you
this
ask,
guy.
Did you ask this clown to explain why he felt that way?
Well, the people were booing me so much in the meeting room. You know, I was the only one pushing this question.
Mm-hmm.
And they were booing me so much in this room that I don't think they heard Senator Vitter, heard me say what I said to Senator Vitter. But what I told him was that I told him the truth whenever I said that the buildings were brought down with demolition charges, and the truth has never dishonored anyone.
Well, they don't want the truth in Congress. In Washington. They're part of the problem, you see. They live in darkness. They preach darkness. They hate the Constitution. We see right now, I mean, what they've done to the Bill of Rights, tearing apart the Constitution when they voted to go to war. And they did it based on emotion. They did it based on frenzy. They did it based on the threat that Bush held over them. You're either with us or you're against us. And these cowards all chickened out. They all knuckled under, didn't they?
Well, they certainly did. And, you know, right now, they're afraid to hold any service for our memory of 9/11 because New York City, where it happened, is a hotbed of conspiracy talk about 9/11. And I have a lot of friends in New York,
yes.
And they have parades and demonstrations there every day, but you never see one word in a nation's press about it,
mm-hmm.
and the media is all headquartered in New York City.
And
they can see
it.
From their office windows all of these demonstrations taking place right outside their windows about
mm-hmm.
9/11,
mm-hmm.
and they have never printed one word about it.
Doesn't that tell you something about
that
the media?
That tells you a lot.
It tells you a lot indeed, and indeed that is why we are captive in this nation to those that are indeed own the media, own the press. It's one big family of people, and I've just named one or two people. I mean, you've got Murray Rothstein, Sumner Redstone there, as he calls himself. You've got all
well, that's
of the...
Rothstein.
Rothstein, whatever he calls himself.
Rothstein,
I mean,
yeah.
Whatever his name is today or tomorrow. But it's the same happy family that controls most
well,
of the media.
They're happy as long as Israel is controlling this country.
Israel, yes. And they are. They are controlling this country, no question about
it. We're giving them $19 billion to kill Arabs, and the Arabs are supplying our oil. and because of this, the Arabs keep jacking the price of oil up, so we pay more oil. And that's only being done.
Well, if I were the Arabs, I wouldn't be selling the United States any oil.
Well, I'm amazed.
I'd sell it to Europe, you know, and sell it to the rest of the world that needs it, but... As far as the U.S. of A., hey, you want to live with Israel and support them, then you die with them. That's
well,
all.
You pay with it
right,
because they're
right.
charging us $3 a gallon for gasoline.
Right, right. Yeah, but see, let's face it, they like money too.
Oh yeah.
And also, they don't have the. I don't think they have that. How can I put it gently? But they don't have the gall to do what the Jews would do. No question, if they were in the driver's seat and had all that oil. I mean, they don't use it punitively.
Oh, they
to be
could
honest.
Use it punitively.
And they should, yes,
yeah.
They should. But, you know, the fact is we don't need their oil, and this discovery, the Gulf of Mexico, of course, is more interesting cannon fodder because it's so far down the ocean floor that it's almost meaningless. But it's a diversion, the latest discovery, because we know within the continental United States, below the ground, oil is replenishing itself.
It is replenishing itself.
Right.
And the oil companies have been telling us since 1920 that we're going to run out of oil in 20 years. And the physicists say, the physicists tell us, there are books out there that say that oil is replenishing itself every year.
Which proves that it's not a fossil fuel.
No, it's not a fossil fuel at all. It's created mostly by the comets that go through our atmosphere, and they create conditions which precipitate the oil.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they've been knowing that since the beginning. And these scare stories about oil, running out of oil, have been floating around since 1880.
Yes, since the days of Sir Francis Drake, I'm afraid.
Oh,
huh?
Yes.
All right. Well, you know, I want to get into more of what you spoke at and spoke about at the conference.
I've got some interesting things here.
Sure.
Including things that they did not let me say.
Okay. You want to start with one now, and we'll take a break, come back?
Well, they asked me to serve on a Holocaust panel on Sunday afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And I was very anxious to talk on that panel, and a couple of ladies got on and started gibbering away about statistics and about the Holocaust being a new religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally, Willis ended the panel, and I said to him, Willis, can you give me 10 seconds to tell these people here what the Holocaust is really about? And he said, yes, I'll do that. And then he closed the panel down, and I said, Willis, you promised to let me speak. And he said, I forgot all about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he is getting, to the point where sometimes he doesn't.
Well, he's 80.
Right.
And I'm 5 years older than he is. But
uh-huh.
I don't forget anything. I mean, if somebody owes me $10, I remember it.
You bet you do. By the way, didn't I pay you that $10 I owed you last time?
Probably forgot it.
I forgot. All right, I forgot. Okay, I'm like Hillary now. I forgot. I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, we got the break coming up. But when we come back, I do want to get into some of those subjects you addressed, and particularly about the corrupt system of banking in the United States today. It's anything but
that. That was going to be my whole speech, and I got delayed so long, and when I got up to speak, I forgot about it. And I had to talk about my memoirs as a youth in Washington.
Yeah. Well, that's all right, because I know you're not forgetting tonight.
Oh,
we invite people on the line also to call in who are not on the line at 800-313-9443 with Eustace Mullins, our guest, and certainly a regular here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And we intend to have him on more, bring him on more, because he is a true national treasure. You have written extensively on this monstrosity called the Federal Reserve System, haven't you?
Oh, I have. Well, no, at my lecture in the AFP, I just called it the greatest crime in American history.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's ever been arrested.
Nobody's been arrested, but it is the biggest swindle, and it makes anything that Jesse James and Charles Ponzi and the rest of them ever done as basically an act of patriotism in comparison.
Jesse James and the so-called Robert Barons were pikers compared to the members of the Federal Reserve System. Not the members of the Federal Reserve System, but the stockholders of this private bank that they call the Federal Reserve System.
And the proof is in the pudding now. You know, I see every day now, I see what's happening with the result of M3 no longer being published.
Oh, yeah.
To show the massive increase in the quantity of paper being issued in called dollars. And what's happening now at the grocery stores and the shelves and the merchandise is from very quickly increasing prices now that are the result of that inflation.
Well,
they are the result of it.
They're not only increasing prices, but they're steadily decreasing the contents of the packages.
That's very
true. They're going
true.
Down from 16 ounces to 14 ounces, mm-hmm. and down to 10 ounces, and down to 6 ounces. That also is inflation.
Well, that's. I'm glad you brought that up, too.
Because well, I've been alone shopping, and I've noticed this.
Yeah, but that is what they do when it comes to the CGI, you know, the Consumer Price Index, CPI.
Oh, yes.
They take a smaller apple, they take a smaller vegetable, they take a smaller item, put it on the scale and say, well, prices have not risen that dramatically because they're measuring a different quantity. And, of course, that's the big secret. That's how they lie.
Oh, that's repeatedly. They lie. That's how figures lie.
Right, exactly. Liars figure. And, you know, both ways. This is why the Federal Reserve System is indeed the biggest scandal in our history.
It is a scandal.
And it should be exposed.
Well, I've been afraid ever since I wrote my book in 1953. I thought this might bring down the whole country. And it probably will eventually.
Well, we're at the point now where it's nearly a century. No society has lasted on paper aristocracy, paper money, more than one century.
Well, they have lasted by constantly printing more and more counterfeit money. I mean, that's why I want to confiscate. I want to have a new television program because the American public loves gangster programs. And so I'm going to mm-hmm. have a new television program called The Counterfeiters, which will dwarf The Godfather and The Sopranos and all these other mafia programs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it.
It would be a great story. I have been hoping that Hollywood would do a story about the counterfeiters for the last 50 years, but they carefully avoid that subject.
mm-hmm. No, they wouldn't touch you with a 10-foot pole.
No, they don't. They won't touch me with a 10-foot pole.
Or a 20-foot pole, for that matter.
Oh, yeah.
Or a check, for that matter. But Eustace, this, I try to educate people on a personal level each and every day when I talk about money and I talk about... what really is money? We don't have money. We have a monetary system, but we don't have money as far as the Federal Reserve notes are concerned. That's not money, but it is a monetary system, and it is in violation of the U.S. Constitution, and it was foistered upon the people in 1913.
Oh, yeah.
When we come back, I want to explore that subject again. Can't help but take notice of the fact that as we have rejected our nation's Christian heritage and the fact that it was built upon this principle right out of the scriptures, right out of the Bible, what we have seen is an abandonment of every sound commandment, every sound biblical admonition, even money, which we're told where it comes from, what it really is, and how we need to retain value, because a corrupt money system corrupts the public and the people, and that's what we have seen. In my lifetime alone, people now gambling away their earnings, hoping they can win so they can keep up with the cost of living. You see how evil the system is because it has rejected the scriptures.
Yes, indeed. And a corrupt money system, a debased monetary system, personally affects the morale of every person in this country.
Exactly.
I mean, they go haywire. You know, John Adams said, as president, he was the second president, and he said that the ignorance of the people about money is going to cause a disaster in this country. It's right on its way.
And that was planned long ago. Now, that's something some people find hard to swallow, but let me ask you, you've studied this a lot more than I have, and probably more than any so-called economist today. You were there, you know, not at the very beginning, but you were closer to it when you were around in Washington than anyone else that I know of personally. And you know that when things happen like this, they don't happen by accident. They were planned to fail. The dollar is not falling.
Roosevelt said that. He said it was not accident. It was planned that way.
Right. And the Federal Reserve System has sown the seeds of the destruction of its own currency.
Oh, it has. I mean, by exposing this, I feared that I was threatening the country, but actually I was just doing my job.
You were doing us a favor. Actually, you were doing your duty.
Well, I was. I couldn't do anything else, because when Ezra Pound sent me to the Library of Congress to expose this criminal operation, he was doing a service to the very people that put him in prison for life without trial.
Right, exactly. And today I see this dollar, so-called dollar, having lost 97% of its value all of these years, is worth almost nothing now. And were it not for the increasing productivity and the increase in goods and so forth, to try to be more proportional to the currency, prices would be that much higher. There's no question about
that. Oh, yes, and they would be unbearable. But we have loaded up China and Japan with this worthless money.
Right, exactly.
They both
but they're getting wise, too, now.
They're going to get at it somehow.
Oh, yeah, they are, and they're planning on dumping. Now, see, this dollar... and getting into a little bit of biblical prophecy here now, this dollar has to be dumped. They're already talking about the Amero now with the new North American Union, and that would be like the Euro. And, of course, that would have to give way to a one-world currency inevitably.
Absolutely, that's what it will be.
That is what is in the cards.
Oh, we need the Alger Hiss to work out a new United Nations group.
We need Alger Hiss now, huh?
Yeah, oh, yes.
That reminds me of when Joe McCarthy used to use the slip when he talked about Adlai Stevenson, and he would say, Alger, I mean Adlai.
That was hilarious. He was brilliant on stuff like that. Joe had a sense of humor.
What's that?
Joe has a sense of humor.
Oh, he was brilliant at that stuff. And when I come back from the break again, we'll have a lot more time. I want to get into some of that and what I've been discovering again, or rediscovering from the archives of film. Eustace, I know that you knew men, you probably, your contemporaries, many of them at the time in history, and men, I don't know how well you knew him, if at all, personally, but Hamilton Fish is quite a character in history, in the Senate, and you know his background, and of course, very extensive, even in World War I, and the Bull Moose Party ticket to the New Yorker Assembly. And he had written a book about FDR, The Other Side of the Coin. Hamilton Fish was quite a source of absolute truth and honesty in government.
Oh, he was a high standard in Washington.
Yeah. Did you know him personally?
No, I did not. But his, Hamilton Fish had a son and a grandson who were mm-hmm. also in Congress. Mm-hmm. And this was a very powerful family in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. And I was thankful that Willis Carto in the American Free Press did issue this book this past year as a gift to people to read a little bit of history on FDR, the treason of the war, and really how we managed to do a lot more damage than we thought in World War I and II by extending all of this Soviet influence. Not only in Europe, of course, but in Korea. That was the next war in Vietnam. So it was definitely a pattern of betrayal. There's no question about that. Now, I don't know if you knew Martin Dies particularly.
No, he was a little before my time.
But he was another voice of reason in this treason, if you will, of the Democrat Party. Until the Republicans caught up with the Democrats, of course.
Oh, they really did.
And look where they are now, right?
They came from behind, they're leaving the pack right now.
I like the way you put that, yeah. And I happen to be, as part of this documentary, going over the programs like Biography, CBS, on Joe McCarthy, and how, Joe had... been one of those people that was like described as a bull in a china closet. He wouldn't sit there and take people lying to him and playing games. He wanted answers, and he wanted to know why, for instance, this 20 years of treason was within the Democratic Party from the 30s to the 40s to World War II, and who was responsible for it. And all they did, all these hypocrites in Congress did, was one of two things. Either they took the other side, apologizing on behalf of the communists, or number two, pretending to be his friend and then betraying him in the end. And that treason was just, it's enormous how evil these senators were who said they would stand by him, and instead they sided with the press and with Eisenhower and covered up this whole charade. Think of all the American lives that were lost because these other senators would not stand up and take down the Eisenhower corruption that was so evident.
And they had many opportunities and obligations to do so, because they knew exactly what was going on, and they got spoken up in any time and cleared up the whole situation.
And now we're seeing it repeated again today.
Repeated the same process.
Oh, yes. Over and over and over again. Anyone who gets up, and we don't have men like Joe McCarthy today. We don't have honest men in
Washington. Well, because he was driven out of public life. You know, the only way they refer to Joe McCarthy in the press today is as an evil monster.
Right.
And they have it on videos and everything else in the library, the evil monster. And I was in Wisconsin a few years ago, and I was speaking at a graveside memorial service for Joe McCarthy and standing by his grave. And a little lady came up to me, a sweet little old lady, and she said to me, "Eustace, did you know that Joe was always a pussycat?" And I said, "I always knew that." Well, anybody who knew him knew that. And this little sweet lady was his personal secretary.
Yes, she's written a book.
Oh, yes, she's got a wonderful little book.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the most marvelous person I've ever known in my life. And I said, "Yes, I know he was always a pussycat. Joe would not hurt a flea." People don't remember that Joe was the most popular person in Washington, D.C. He was very gregarious, and everybody liked him. And that Joe has disappeared into the mist that they've created.
Well, I think it was the down-to-earth average guy who...
He was
really...
very average. And I know a guy lives the block behind me who grew up on a farm right across the road from Joe McCarthy in Wisconsin. That's how bizarre life is, that you wind up living next door to somebody that knew Joe McCarthy as a boy.
Well, you know, I've been always suspicious whenever I see how the media treat people and the contempt with which they hold many people, and those are the people usually that are the best and the best that society has offered over the years. And you know, he was certainly one of them. And my studies of going back to that era,
I'm going to do a biography of Joe, because Joe has not had a good biography. He has got to give. To me, to give him a biography that does honor to his memory.
Well, yeah, because you knew him personally.
I knew him personally, and I knew what the man was like, and I want to correct the misconception that was created at a cost of millions of dollars by creating this false memory of Joe McCarthy.
Well, myths die hard, as you know. And,
they really do.
You know, when myths
and
are created.
And I'm fighting a myth there, because I knew the man, and I knew what that man was capable of. And he was not capable of hurting any human being on the face of the earth.
Well, you know, there's another thing about the investigations of communism and so forth, and the charges that many innocent people had their careers destroyed and so forth was a total fabrication. In fact, the opposite was true.
They have never found a victim of Joe McCarthy to this day.
And that's true, but he also did try to vindicate those who might have been hurt by any mingling in with communists or misrepresentation of what they were supposed to have done.
That
so he went to
nature.
Bat for them.
That was his nature.
Yeah, right.
If he even inadvertently hurt anybody, he would do his best to make up for it.
Did you see how the lies of the media, the media that's controlled by the Cainites today, as we call them, the sons of Cain, how they deliberately falsify history? So
everything, yes.
It's everything. It's not just that. It's all throughout history I have found that what we have been told in school and what is real are two entirely different things, you know? And you can go up and down the aisle on all the issues, and you could say, yeah, there's a tinge here, there's a bias there. Sure, he who controls the ink controls the story, and that's what it comes down to.
Listen, well, the media has handled me beautifully. They never mentioned my name in the last 50 years.
Well, I guess
they could not. They could not print any lies about me.
And you're still alive to refute them.
Oh yes. No.
Not that they would give you the space, of course.
And I have never been on television in my life.
No.
They absolutely will not admit that I exist.
Well, we got to get you on cable access television. That's
I've done cable access all over the United States, but never in New York and Los Angeles.
Well, that has to say something for your worth, right there. Great. All right. Let's take some calls, all right? 800-313-9443 with Eustace Mullins, author extraordinaire. And let's start with Leslie in Louisiana. Hello, Leslie.
This is Leslie from Virginia.
Oh, you're from Virginia. Well, they got you down as Louisiana. I thought you moved.
No. I'm quite happy being a Virginian.
Welcome back, Leslie. We haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, I want to thank you, and you've got a fantastic guest on tonight.
Amen.
And I'll tell you, Mr. Mullins can help us, because he's quite aware of all the games that was played on the Federal Reserve.
Right.
And this was just, this came out on WorldNet Daily, and as you know, we've got the superhighway that's coming, the NAFTA superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think Mr. Mullins may be able to have some answers for, now this is a syndicated columnist, WorldNet Daily, Joseph Farah, and this, September 1, the superhighway, no one is funding. Now, in the article, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee denies and ridiculed the idea that there are no plans to build the NAFTA highway, and he affirmed in no uncertain terms that Congress has authorized no money for the project. Now, that is a damnable lie. And he lays out in the article the money that's already been spent so far since 1999 is off budget. And it was through NASCO, and that's the corridor that they're using. Now, this is the wording, Mr. Mullins, that they're using, and I think you'll find this intriguing, being a writer. Quote, the project will have a team approach using members of NASCO as the primary participants in the project to the extent possible. NASCO believes the deployment of a modern information system will reduce the cost, improve the efficiency, reduce trade-related congestion, and enhance security of cross-border and corridor information, trade, and traffic. Now, we're going to the same thing, Mr. Mullins, the deceit, the lying, and I've got two other congressmen, too, lying on this. And I've got the quotes right here. It's only a little 2 pages. There was Jim Oberstar from he's a Republican from Minnesota, and he said there are no earmarks for such a superhighway.
We are back with Eustace Mullins, and we are back with Leslie of Virginia. Hello, Leslie.
Thank you.
As you were saying, these congressmen are lying, which is what they do best anyway, by the way.
Well, this is very serious, Mr. Adams and Houston, because here you've got the majority whip in the House of Representatives. His name is Roy Blunt. And he is saying the same thing, that the federal government has nothing to do with the idea of building the NAFTA. However, the NASCO website says on its own how they secured the money. It's already been secured, $150 million for the project, and they're getting another $79. They already got another $79. It takes us over $220-some million. It's already been secured. And what they did, they took it off budget. Now, what the author wants to know here is why are they lying and why? The point being, you've got, this is what you've got. You've got the Senate for the Intelligence Committee, the chairman. You've got the House of Representatives whip, majority whip. And then you've got, what was the other guy's name? Jim Oberstar. He's the Republican from Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah,
now, the point being, what do you do with these Congress critters that give falsification, make false statements to the public? What can we do? Because this is very, very serious. And the WorldNet Daily is quite well known. This is like I said, this guy is a leading columnist. He's the I'm pretty sure he's the CEO of this site and others for this site particularly. The point is, where does the public go from here? And what do we do?
Well, I want to let Eustace handle that.
Right,
he's
this,
my
this
guest.
Is a repeat of the Federal Reserve.
Oh, absolutely. It's Jekyll Island all over again, Eustace.
Now, what
it really is.
You know about the NAFTA superhighway and what they're doing. What's being done to the United States, right?
Well, they're not covering very much of my area, the
Well, it doesn't get anywhere. I mean, it never brought up in debates for members of the Senate, I know, in my area, or the Congress, because most of the media are playing dumb or are dumb, and they're not bringing up these major issues. This is an important issue, every bit as important as Iraq and foreign policy, and it's not being brought up.
And I read the Washington Post every day, and all people are always calling me and asking about the thing. And I say, right, I read the Washington Post every day, and there's nothing in there about that. So I don't know anything about it.
There's nothing in there to begin with. I don't.
Well, I can tell you, for them to make these statements, these public statements and who these people are,
mm-hmm.
I think that they need, there's got to be accountability here. For their outright denial, and this money was off budget, and I'm so thankful that he's got the information.
Joe Farris column, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And but this is very, very, very mm-hmm. serious. Their statements and their denial when the money has already been spent towards the project,
mm-hmm.
and I think there should be ramifications. It's the Federal Reserve all over again, and the people have got to hold these people accountable, because I can tell you, if we don't do it now, it's quite obvious.
Well, we're it. We're the media here. They're the only ones that are going to learn are going to learn from the American media that we constitute. Without us, they know nothing, okay? We did it with immigration. It was a hot-button issue, and now they couldn't pass the bill in the House, okay? So this is how tough it is when the people are informed. People start waking up and mobilizing. That's the only way, Leslie. Is
well, we have a constitution, as Mr. Mullins knows, in section four, Article 4, Section 4, that is supposed to protect us from invasion. And there's no question that our president is derelict in his duties. And I agree totally with Pat Buchanan on this,
mm-hmm.
and why it's not being enforced, because he swore on the Bible to uphold the Constitution, and he has done just the other. In fact, on March 23rd, 2005, he signed the North American Union Agreement, and with at that time Prime Minister Paul Martin and Vicente Fox of Mexico. But the tragedy of this whole thing, he is sneaking around. He has yet to utter a word in the mainstream press or anywhere else what he has done, and meanwhile he has the gall to tell us on TV today about how he's done so much for the protection of this country when he won't do his most basic responsibilities.
We know that. That's all old news. But question, I think, to answer your question again, we're the only source, the alternate media, of bringing the information to the American public. Because no one else is going to do it. They're all part of the problem.
Well, Mr. Mullins, I want to thank you for everything you have done. And I'll tell you, this is the Federal Reserve to slip this thing through. It's a repeat all over again.
It is, because they found out it works in 1913, and they got what they wanted, and they're using it over and over again.
Well, there's got to be ramifications, because for this guy to be chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee and make these statements that are outright lies, and these other people of the whip, there's got to be accountability. And I'm so very thankful for this network. So very thankful for you, Mr. Mullins,
Amen.
And for Mr. Adams.
Thank you, Leslie. Keep supporting RBN. And now let us go to Joseph. Hello, Joe. You're on the program.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Eustace.
Hi there.
Yes.
Romania is looking into the archives and sealed records of the slaughter of 160 million Christians between 1917 and 1988. They're looking into the sealed records in their country to see who, what, when, where, and why, and where the bodies are buried in their country.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. There's a wind blowing through the nations at this time, as we see the nations come under the one world government. A strong wind seems to be blowing through the people's spirits.
Well, long overdue, coming. Isn't it?
Well, retribution is coming now. I have campaigned for years to get somebody in the Soviet Union charged with killing a million Russian Christians a year between 1917 and 1989. And so far, not one person has ever been arrested for it.
No, they've been rewarded, if anything.
Well, they are. They're still running Russia today.
That's
Putin
right.
And all those people, they are the ones that did that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to me that they could kill 1 million people a year and nobody knows about it, but everybody knows about the Holocaust in Germany.
Yeah.
But they've never heard about the Holocaust in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a booklet a few years ago called The Secret Holocaust,
yes.
Which detailed the Bolshevik Revolution and the French Revolution and the Spanish Civil War in 1936 when Christians were killed, and those three massacres have never been adequately covered in history.
Well, give them time, Eustace.
Well,
give them a few more centuries.
They were mostly priests and nuns, and I can't understand why somebody has never memorialized the murder of those nuns in Spain and Russia and France, which were Catholic countries. Well, Russia was Eastern Orthodox, but it was just a branch of that same Christian religion.
That's right. You know, Nicholas in Alexandria, Nicholas was actually of the family of Philip, who's married, he's one of the Romanovs that's married to the Queen of England.
Oh, yes.
This is one of the same family.
Oh, yes.
They were actually part of a Brent Holocaust or a Brent sacrifice.
Oh, they were sacrificed. Well, you know, I knew Alexis Romanov in New York.
Uh-huh.
He died recently. But Alexis was a survivor of the massacre of 1917. And he died in obscurity all of his life. He was afraid to go out anywhere because he was under a death sentence all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he managed to live like a hidden person all these years. He never lived an open life. I mean, he was a very fine person.
Did you know that, Joe?
No, I didn't know that.
I've got his only autobiography. He left an autobiography, which somebody sent me a few years ago, and he's a very fine-looking man. And I thought to myself, the life that he led as a hunted man is certainly a lot worse than the life that I've led here as a citizen in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Michael Bordeaux, in his book, The Opium of the People, Christianity in the Soviet Union, gave some of those statistics, 160 million Christians.
Yeah.
Also, he gave information that the Nicholas and Alexandria and the family were not only shot, but when they were thrown into their mass grave.
Oh, their mass grave, yeah.
They were chopped up in pieces.
Oh, it was a brutal thing.
They threw lime and acid on all the bodies.
Uh-huh.
Burning the bodies to fulfill the prophecy, if I might.
The Holocaust.
Amos chapter 2, which was written in 700 B.C.
I burnt off
prophecy of this event.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, that was a demonic event and it's never been adequately told to the people.
Yes.
The people of Russia really know very little about it. It's been totally obscured.
Amos chapter 2, verse 1. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Moab and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because he burned the bones of the king of Edom in lime. This was 700 B.C., prophesying that 1917 event.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Fascinating, Joe.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. All right. That's excellent, excellent information that, again, you will not likely
hear. People need to know that.
No, you know, you learn something new every day by listening to RBN.
Oh, I do. That really always makes life a constant revelation.
Indeed it does. Let's move along. Henry is next. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, one thing I wanted to correct the gentleman on is that he was talking about something with the gold money and talking about the scriptures and the Christian stuff with the Bible. But what he forgets is that...
Who's the he you're talking about? Who's the gentleman?
Oh, gentleman. I forgot his name. The one that you... Your guest that you have on the phone there.
His name is Eustace.
Oh, Houston. Okay. Eustace?
Eustace, not Eustace.
Eustace. Okay, Eustace.
Yeah.
Oh, because... okay, sorry. Eustace, yeah. Because Switzerland... they may have changed it now, but Switzerland always did have their Swiss franc was gold and gold coin. The Palestinians also, but they were Muslim, they had gold coin before you had the Zionist occupation in the middle of Palestine. You know, the SLC, the L stands for little, the C stands for country. You know what the S stands for. So what I'm saying is that the religious stuff with that has nothing to do with it, with money, because Switzerland, even to this day, is not really a very religious country. Also, they're not a member of the EU. They also have armed militia, and if you, you're supposed to hide your gun and your rifle in your house a certain way, and if you, I think once or twice a year or so many times a year they come, if they can find your gun, you can get a fine, you know, because they want to make sure that the, if they need a militia, you know, the guns are well hidden so they can't be found, so if they need to be called up, they can be.
Eustace give a response. Do you have any response to what, Henry is saying, Eustace?
Well, I know very little about the Swiss internal affairs, but I do know that Mr. Patterson, one of my editors, has worked with the Swiss system for many years, and he's always assured his gold back. In fact, I've had a secret account over there from time to time, and I've always used the Swiss banking system.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call, Henry. And I think about the, as far as the scriptural references, I may have been the one who actually was referring to it. But in any event, it's the basis of money is mentioned in the scriptures, and that is why gold and silver have indeed been honest money right from the beginning. Now, whether a nation is Christian or not, they don't have to be Christian or even religious to enjoy the benefits of that prescription.
Oh, yes.
Anybody can do it.
The Constitution prescribes gold and silver as money.
Right, right. And the origins of it. So,
yes.
Again, I'm saying is that all things came from God.
Oh,
and
yes.
All things come from the blessings as well as the curses come from the Father as well. So that's something I stress, because we need to know that if we went back to our moorings and we went back to the beginning and the basis for our Christian liberty, then we wouldn't have the problems that we have today. See, it's because of the abandonment of those weights and measures and prescriptions in the Scriptures that we have all of our problems today, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
other nations can do as they will, but America stands out as different.
Well, that's why we have the devil's money, and that's what our problem is.
Yep, absolutely. And the devil, too. Okay.
Money created out of nothing. That is capitalism.
Yes, indeed.
It's money from nothing.
That's right. You are, you know, Eustace, you have some basic common, down-to-earth common sense knowledge that I wish could be imparted to everyone who calls himself an American.
That was taught to me by Ezra Pound in the Insane Asylum,
mm-hmm.
to be down to earth
mm-hmm.
and explain things so that people can understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk over anyone's head, and I don't think anybody has ever complained that my books are over their head.
No, they're not. They're not. And if anything, you know, the heads are under the books. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, let's be thankful for what knowledge is in the books.
Yes,
let's move to the next call here. Barney in Maryland. Hello, Barney.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
If Eustace wants to find out about the North American Union and the selling of America, he should go to Idaho Observer. They had two full-page ads on
mm-hmm. Oh, I haven't been getting that paper, and that is a wonderful paper.
Yeah.
Now it's time to get a subscription, Eustace.
Well, I'll certainly go back and look that up, because the Idaho Observer will tell me everything I need to know.
Yeah, that's right, he does. You would think that when they're changing our form of government and selling your country out, that every major news media outlet in the country would be have it for front page headlines.
Yeah.
What I wanted to go into, oh, by the way, this guy, Alexis, didn't he print a paper called The Eagle?
Oh, yes. I got that paper for years, and it was a fine paper, and that's how I became acquainted with him.
Yeah.
He was a very courageous man. Even though he's a hunted man, he lived in this country and printed his paper, which would cause him a lot of harassment.
Yeah, he's good.
Oh, yes.
What I'm concerned about, according to information I have received, George Bush Sr. went around the world conning nations into establishing credit with a World Bank. And he, even though they didn't need it at the time, he said, well, you might need it, so just put up some of your infrastructure as collateral in case it comes about. So then he went down into Argentina and conned them the same way. And then they created conditions where Argentina got in trouble and they had to foreclose, and so they took over their water and sewer system. And then the contractors that took it over didn't do any repair work or anything to it, and then they raised the rates. Now, here in the United States, Bush Sr. Created the conditions where this private public partnership and the sale of our infrastructure to farmers.
Oh, yeah.
And what I want to know, right now, like the lady brought up, the superhighway from Mexico to Canada will displace thousands of old established families, and it will, and the North American Union, it will eliminate our borders and the Constitution.
Oh, yeah.
And then down in Texas, we're turning over 11,000-foot runway to the Chinese.
My gosh.
And
you see, not much of that information is getting to the American people.
Virtually none of it is.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And that's the problem. That, again, proves the point we've been making about how controlled the major media are.
It turned into one of the biggest stories in the country, and you cannot find a word out about it.
So it's no wonder we don't know the facts about 9/11.
Well, yes. Well, you can find out more about 9/11 than you can about some of the other scandals.
And that's not saying very much, you see.
No, it is not. It doesn't say much at all.
Okay, Bonnie, thank you for your
call. I have one more point.
All right, quick.
The Arabs have decided to dump the dollar because the people raised up Cain about them taking over the ports, and congressmen stopped them. Congress stopped them. And so they decided, like I say, not to use the dollar anymore. How long can this go on?
I'm afraid not very. You know that as well as I do.
It's going to create a crisis.
But when it does, what they will see is the beginning of this regional superpower, superstate, merged into a one-world system. They need to have more crises in the world to be able to convince everyone to give up their freedom to join the league, if you will, the new League of Nations, the new world order. That's what it's all evolving into, my friend. All right, Barney, thank you. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Gene in Texas. Hello, you're next. Gene in Texas, are you there?
Oh, yes.
Here you are. Hi, Gene.
Hi. Yes, I like to read from the Bible here just a little prophecy about the central banking system, which is the Federal Reserve System.
Mm-hmm.
The Federal Reserve System is actually just an extension of the first United States Bank and the second United States Bank that was canceled by President Andrew Jackson. And in Deuteronomy 28, verse 43, beginning verse 43, it's about the curses that would be put upon our people if we did not obey God's laws. And it says, "The stranger that is within thee shall get thee up very high, and thou shalt come down very low. He shall lend to thee,
mm-hmm.
and thou shalt not lend to him."
That's right.
"He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. And moreover, all these curses shall come upon thee and shall pursue thee and overtake thee till thou be destroyed, because thou hearkenest not unto the voice of the Lord thy God to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded thee." And these are the laws that these preachers say are done away with by the new covenant, which is according to Hebrews chapter 8, verse 10, and Hebrews chapter 10, verse 16, are part of the new covenant also. Now, Eustace, I like to ask anybody out there, how did Moses know this? This was written over 3,300 years ago. How could just a human being, a mortal human being, know this? It had to have been God Elohim that wrote these words.
Oh, yeah. Because the knowledge comes from God.
That's right. And we're serving these words of Deuteronomy. Go ahead, Eustace.
All right. It couldn't come from anybody else, and you have to acknowledge that, that God is telling us what we should do, and if we don't do it, we'll be punished.
And that's
we
exactly are being what punished. Happened. That's
yeah.
right.
And one more quick thing. I know you have the callers. Just about every chairman of the Federal Reserve since 1913, beginning with Paul Warburg, has been a nominal Jew. Is that not correct?
Oh, that's correct, yes.
Isn't that amazing? The people of Revelation chapter 2 and verse 9, Revelation chapter 3 and verse 9, have run the Federal Reserve system here in this country ever since its inception in 1914.
Well, it was their system, and it always has been a private bank.
Mm-hmm.
The American people have nothing to do with it.
So now you know, you understand the biblical story out there, people. It's one group of people that's trying to destroy us through the money, another group of people who are of God's calling who are saying, this is why you're being destroyed, because you've abandoned his prescription for money, gold and silver. There you go. And obedience, most of all. Thank you, Gene. And Eustace, we were just saying a minute or so ago about how important it is to know real money, good money. Because we don't have it now.
Oh, it means everything.
Well, I say I don't want to call the system a money system because it's not. It's a monetary system.
Yeah, monetary. You know,
right.
It's capitalistic money. And that is our problem. We got involved with the devil's money, and now that we're getting the devil's due.
Yes, indeed. You have to look. You know, if you don't give credit, as he was saying, Gene was saying in Deuteronomy, that book is one of the most hated books by Satan's children today.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no question they don't want to remind us of how corrupt we've become through the money supply.
That's right.
And the money, if it's not money, if it's a monetary system based on a lie, based on corruption, which it is, John Maynard Keynes and Galbraith and the rest of them admitted it, then it's going to further corrupt the public. And that's what it's done. It's turned people into lascivious people, covetous people, and people today are doing everything they can to try to keep up. This is the attack on society. People need to know it.
It affects everybody, and that's why we have the corrupt media, because that corrupt media is owned by the Federal Reserve System.
The same people. It's corrupt hand in glove, right?
Yes, indeed, and that's why they will not tell the truth about anything.
They can't. They really can't. You're right. You're right. And it's so apparent to me now in these last few years of doing talk radio. It's just amazing how true that statement is, and the whole world will marvel after the beast in the future because of his incredible powers of deception. People love to be lied to, and that's what makes politics so successful, unfortunately.
Well, you tell them what they want to believe. They want to believe these things.
Exactly.
And I have never told them what they believe, and that's why the media pretends that I do not exist, but my books do not exist.
Exactly. By the way, just a reminder, Leslie had called back, and she wanted me to remind you, our listeners, about the website, spp.gov, and that's one of them. And, of course, worldnetdaily.net, and I believe that's .net. And, of course, that is one of the websites that people like Joe Farah can be read on, and others as well.
Oh, yeah.
So their columns appear regularly there. Bob Cohen, who wrote the book on journalistic fraud, and a number of others, by the way. So I just wanted to mention that. And we'll continue to do that.
I don't have access to those things. And I'm not getting the information I need.
Right, right. Well, we're going to get you settled down, I guess, with some computer work, huh?
Yeah, I need to do that.
So you can manage things over the next generation.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Eustace, now, people listening, because we're just about out of time, I guess you don't mind now giving out your new phone number or your new phone with your new number or whatever, and people can call you at the number we mentioned, 540-886-5580, right?
That's right. They can call me now because my phone is working. I got a new phone and a new answering service.
Okay.
And
no more interference,
apparently,
I'm happy to say.
Apparently, the new phone, it's something they cannot control. The phones I had were older phones,
mm-hmm.
and they had those completely controlled.
Right, right, exactly. Okay, then, Eustace, it's been my pleasure. Time just flew by again.
Oh,
and
you did
looking
it to me
forward
again.
To
you did it to me again.
I know. I kept you up past your bedtime.
Your station goes, your program goes so fast that it's over before I know it.
I know it. We'll do it again in about a few weeks. How's that?
Oh, I look forward to it.
Thank you, Eustace. Bless you. God bless.